For my father and my mother, who gave me a pocket watch, then taught me to tell time and everything else. We are bound by a common anguish. Harper Lee. Prologue. Nobody recognized her. Harper Lee was well known, but not by sight, and if she hadn't introduced herself, it's unlikely that anyone in the courtroom would have figured out who she was. Hundreds of people were crowded into the gallery, filling the wooden benches that squeaked whenever someone moved, or leaning against the back wall if they hadn't arrived in time for a seat. Late September wasn't late enough for the Alabama heat to have died down, and the air conditioning in the courthouse wasn't working. So the women waved fans while the men's suits grew damp under their arms and around their collars. The spectators whispered from time to time, and every so often, they laughed, an uneasy laughter that evaporated whenever the judge quieted them. The defendant was black, but the lawyers were white, and so were the judge and the jury. The charge was murder in the first degree. 3 months before, at the funeral of a 16-year-old girl, the man, with his legs crossed patiently beside the defense table, had pulled a pistol from the inside pocket of his jacket and shot the Reverend Willie Maxwell 3 times in the head. 300 people had seen him do it. Many of them were now at his trial, not to learn why he had killed the Reverend. Everyone in 3 counties knew that, and some were surprised no one had done it sooner. But to understand the disturbing series of deaths that had come before the one they'd witnessed. One by one, over a period of 7 years, 6 people close to the Reverend had died under circumstances that nearly everyone agreed were suspicious and some deemed supernatural. Through all of the resulting investigations, the Reverend was represented by a lawyer named Tom Radney, whose presence in the courtroom that day wouldn't have been remarkable had he not been there to defend the man who killed his former client. A Kennedy liberal in the Wallace South, Radney was used to making headlines, and this time he would make them far beyond the local Alexander City outlook. Reporters from the Associated Press and other wire services, along with national magazines and newspapers including Newsweek and the New York Times, had flocked to Alexander City to cover what was already being called the tale of the murderous voodoo preacher and the vigilante who shot him. One of the reporters, though, wasn't constrained by a daily deadline. Harper Lee lived in Manhattan, but still spent some of each year in Monroeville, the town where she was born and raised, only 150 miles away from Alex City. 17 years had passed since she'd published To Kill a Mockingbird, and 12 since she'd finished helping her friend Truman Capote report the crime story in Kansas that became In Cold Blood. Now, finally, she was ready to try again. One of the state's best trial lawyers was arguing one of the state's strangest cases, and the state's most famous author was there to write about it. She would spend a year in town investigating the case, and many more turning it into prose. The mystery in the courtroom that day was what would become of the man who shot the Reverend Willie Maxwell. But for decades after the verdict, the mystery was what became of Harper Lee's book. Part 1. The Reverend. Chapter 1. Divide the waters from the waters. Enough water, like enough time, can make anything disappear. 100 years ago, in the place presently occupied by the largest lake in Alabama, there was a region of hills and hollers and hardscrabble communities with a pretty little river running through it. The Tallapoosa River forms where a creek named McClendon meets a creek named Mud, after each of them has trickled down from the Appalachian foothills of Georgia. Until it was dammed into obedience, the Tallapoosa just kept on trickling from there.